I was feeling like a dork because I'm not as good as everybody else and they're judging me when they're not paying attention at all. But worst case scenario is they just see someone trying, like putting an effort to get better. And there's nothing, that's a cool thing. Like it's really cool to try at something, put effort into it. And if people see that, that's something to be proud of, not something to be ashamed of.
Everybody, welcome back. Today, I'm joined by Tom Buck. Tom is a podcaster, a YouTuber, and a formal digital media teacher. It was a really interesting conversation for me. We talked about getting started as being a creator online, how Tom grew his YouTube channel, then in 2021, decided to take it full time and leave his teaching job. We talked a lot about the revenue streams to sustain himself as a full-time creator, but we also got into this human and emotional side, creating things online, why it feels so difficult to start something new, how uncomfortable it is when we're just not great at something and we're still learning the ropes. We talked a lot about gear and what you actually need to start something new. And in the end, he shared with me about how a YouTube comment introduced him to his now wife. Really interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Tom, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I've really been looking forward to this conversation. I've been reading more about you and getting more into kind of the Tom Buck creative universe. So for people who don't know you or haven't subscribed to your channel, could you tell them a bit about what you do online?
Yeah, I basically am a lifelong AV nerd, cameras, microphones, audio, video production. I love all that stuff. And so my YouTube channel kind of shares that. I try to share what I know in a helpful way, but without positioning myself as like the expert. So I'm an enthusiast about this stuff, have experience, but I also have a lot to learn. I'll share with you what I'm thinking is interesting and helpful, and maybe you'll find that helpful. Then I've also got several podcasts, the main one being The Enthusiasm Project, which is just my personal one, where it's usually just me alone in a room talking to myself for an hour and a half, overlapping. And prior to that, I was a high school digital media teacher for 11 years. And then I moved to full-time YouTuber. So the master's degree is really paying off there.
When I was going back and reading about you a little bit and then also looking at some of your videos, it made me realize there has to be a lot of lessons that you learn from being a teacher, because the style that you have on YouTube reminds me of some of the best teachers I had growing up.
It's so funny because the one of the main reasons I started my channel was because I had been teaching for so long, but as a teacher, I wasn't really making anything because I was too busy, honestly. And I wanted to start a channel to have something totally separate from work. This was about 6 years ago, and that I could just be my own creative thing. And of course, then they ended up kind of merging, and then the YouTube channel ended up becoming my job. So that plan didn't exactly work, but I was really shocked.
The plan went a little too good.
I'm not complaining. It's not what I expected though when I started, but the thing about the YouTube channel that surprised me was it felt like it helped me become a better teacher, because it made me so hyper aware of how I come across when I'm explaining something or teaching something, because you're filming yourself, editing yourself. But then the teaching side of things was so helpful with the YouTube side of things, because learning how to explain things and how to break things down and being comfortable doing that. And, you know, sometimes you make mistakes and sometimes you need to correct something or whatever it might be. And it was really interesting how the two helped each other build up. It was like this spiral of progress.
That's fancy. Interesting, because I've noticed being on the teaching side and being with like a live audience, you get a type of feedback you can't get obviously from YouTube or podcasting, where you can see, oh, you're zoning out here. That's like the real life attention graph that you see like going down on YouTube stats. You can see that happening in real time. But the opposite of that is editing yourself. Like if you take real, like your own video and you're editing it, you start noticing all sorts of things about the way you talk and your cadence, what you do when you're stalling to figure out an idea. Just editing some of myself, I mean, that for me, some of those were most painful moments, very painful learning experience.
Yeah, it feels weird. Definitely that was a hurdle when I started my channel, because originally my channel, I wanted it to be like, the channel was called The Enthusiasm Project, and I wanted it to be profiles of people essentially diving into things they were enthusiastic about. Maybe it's a job, maybe it's not, but I wanted to make like a series of of mini documentary profile things. So I was never going to be in it. And then I realized scheduling that was a nightmare, and I'd make like one video every 3 or 4 months, maybe. But if I was the one on camera, it was just up to me and my schedule, so I could do a lot more. That was like out of necessity. But it felt really weird to like, I'm going to point a camera at myself and record myself because I'm saying something that's so important, it should be recorded. And then I'm going to take the footage of myself, put it on a computer, and I'm going to sit there editing footage of myself to post online. It felt weird. It was very hard to get over that. It helps with practice, but it helped to just sort of think like, you want to make a podcast, you make a video. It feels weird to film yourself, but the people watching and listening expect there to be somebody. And it, in this case, it just kind of happens to be you, I guess.
The version of that I had was the first time I ever was doing a podcast. I realized later I was hypercritical of people who do podcasts, I guess, in my own mind. I was like, well, who's this person to do a podcast? So I was like imagining myself being somebody else critiquing me in a way that I wouldn't critique another person.
Right. Of course not. Yeah, you're always going to be harsh on yourself like that.
And so I was like, who are you, Albin, to do this podcast? And then I realized no one in real life was thinking that. They didn't care. If they didn't like it, they'd turn it off and move on with their lives. And if they enjoyed it, they'd stick around.
Yeah, no, it's still a thing. Even I was recording a podcast episode like a week or two ago, and it went kind of long. It was like supposed to be an hour. It was edging on 90 minutes. And I was like, oh, there's one more thing I want to talk about. And then in my mind, I was like, if somebody has listened to this for 89 minutes, I don't think they're going to be mad that I go for another 10 minutes. Like, you know, if they're already listening to you, you've already kind of won. Like, they're on board, and they probably want you to succeed too a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. We imagine that the people who are attracted will always be the people who are not excited for our success. So one of the videos I went and watched of yours was when you hit 5,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
2.5 years ago, all the top comments are people who are like, you deserve so many more subscribers. You've done such a great job. I can't wait to watch more of your videos. The people who are hating on the videos, they left one mean comment and moved on. The people who stick around are the ones who are like, this guy's awesome. How does he only have 5,000 subscribers? This makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's funny because that's like, I'm sure you're the same way. That's how I feel when there's a podcast I listen to that becomes popular, or there's a channel I watch that starts blowing up. I'm really happy for them. Like, I'm excited for the person. And sometimes you catch like a channel that's, you know, every day it's really growing, like 10,000, 20,000 subscribers a day. And I love, like, I'm going to refresh and see, wow, they went up another 2,000. That's amazing. Like, it's really fun to see somebody else get that. Yeah, that's how people would feel if they're a fan of what you're making. They want you to succeed. Because if they don't want you to succeed, they might just say something mean, but then they're not spending much other time talking or thinking about you. They moved on to hating something else over here.
I noticed this with your channel as well. So you spent 2 years on your YouTube channel, and that's when you hit 5,000 subscribers. That was 2.5 years ago, and now you're at 122,000 subscribers. What was that journey like? Obviously, in the beginning, you couldn't devote as much time to the channel, but what was that journey like through the course of growing the channel?
It's been an interesting, I'm really like, overall, I like the rate of growth, you know, because a lot of people will say like, they don't want their, or it's not about the numbers and things, which is true, but also you don't want the numbers to be zero or negative. Like, you want there to be some growth. And one thing that I have seen when those channels do blow up like that is it, there's a lot of, you know, there's the examples we shared where people handle it well, but there's many, probably more examples of people that don't really handle it well and things kind of fall off, or it causes a lot of problems for them. And which makes sense. It's like way more attention and eyeballs than a human being is programmed to have on them all at once. And so I've really liked the relatively moderate, steady growth of the channel because it's been easy to adapt to. Like, I don't know what I would do if it went from 5,000 to 100,000 in like 2 months. That would have been really hard. But doing that over a number of years was like, okay, I can handle this now, you know. And that, I feel like my big thing has always been trying to make it sustainable. And I think that's really helped. Is like, it's not necessarily the most popular or the fastest growing or the videos with the most views, but it's really kind of solid. I think that's been helpful. So I can feel weird sometimes. I won't lie. You have the thing where it's like, someone starts 2 years later and grows five times as fast. And you're like, man, I've been over here for like 6 years. But, you know, that's just hopefully a little part of, I think it's a natural, competitive, maybe even an insecure part of most people that exist. And if you can kind of like get over that and just go like, my thing is my thing and it goes the way that it goes. Nobody else wins or nobody else loses because I win or lose. Like, we're all kind of on our own separate path here.
For Buzzsprout, the channel that we watched pass us was you. We were like, he's doing podcasting videos and we're doing podcasting videos. And now look at him skyrocketing. He's going to catch us in like a month.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And that's funny because it never even occurred to me that my channel could be that channel. Until right now, I never even thought. It's always like you're always looking at somebody else, and it's just, I think that's normal, but it's funny though. And yeah, the growth has been awesome, and I hate it. It's way more. 5,000 was way more than anything I could have ever expected. So this is like mind blowing.
I love that you said the goal was to have a channel that was solid as YouTube can be. Part of like making this career solid, and I do want to dive into like making the career switch and going full time as a creator, but how do you make that solid? Because you've built other channels. I know you're active on Twitter and Instagram, and you have courses, and you have the podcasts, and you have the YouTube channel. Like, how does this all fit together into creating something that does feel solid and secure?
Yeah, I mean, what you just mentioned is part of it. All of those different things really helps. Like, you know, at the end of the month, at the beginning of the month, when I go through and do like the finances for the previous month, you know, there's something like 18 or 20 different little income sources, which sounds so like hustle culture, whatever, like you gotta have your side. But there's always
do you publish your monthly like income streams?
I don't. I've done podcast episodes where I've talked about them, but it's this interesting thing though, where it's like, for the most part, any of them on their own aren't really that impressive, but all of them combined is more than I was making as a teacher after 10 years or 11 years. And so that's cool. And there's no lower limit. So when I'm a teacher, like I have my salary, no matter what, I'm going to get paid at least that. But there was a cap. I could never go beyond that. Whereas this, there is no lower. It could be zero or negative 1 month, but there is no cap. And some of it is in my control if I wanted to do more sponsored things or make courses or something. But that has all really helped. And then YouTube, I'm just really lucky that video production is a thing that I love, and that YouTube exists, and that YouTube exists in a way where it, I think, really is the most stable of all of the platforms. There's always talk about like a YouTube competitor and somebody needs to break it, but I'm not saying monopolies are a good thing. Nobody has the infrastructure that can handle what is put on their servers every minute of every day and serve it out. The way that they've been able to build up monetization for creators is pretty great. It's better than any other platform by far. And the different options that you have are huge. They're diving into all kinds of, you can do live streaming, you can do podcasting, you can do short form, you can do long form. It's crazy. And the stuff that you make lives. Like, you went and watched a video from many years ago. On a lot of other platforms, after a day, the thing that you made is just going to disappear. I like that the time I spend on something for YouTube, that video can still have a life years later and still help somebody figure something out, even though it was made in 2019 or 2018 or whatever. And that is very unique to YouTube. And that's definitely a reason why I think YouTube is a good main platform to have. And I'm just fortunate that the thing I was interested in matched up with that platform specifically.
If there's somebody right now who's looking at, I'm starting a YouTube channel, I'm starting a podcast, I want to have something that is mine online that's not associated with work, what advice would you give them, or what would you start pointing them towards?
I think what you just said is a great place to come from in the first place. Like, something that is mine that is not work is really good. It's easy to think about, well, these people make money and this person, it became their full-time job. But it's, I feel like diving into it for that reason, most of the time, it's kind of a recipe for disaster. But diving it in because you just want to, and there's something you're interested in. My wife and I always talk about, like, it's the thing that your friends and family are tired of hearing about. If you have whatever it is, any kind of interest or knowledge or whatever, that you find yourself going like, oh, I want to tell someone about this, but I can't keep talking about it, or people are tired of it. That's probably a great thing to make a channel or a podcast or something about, because there's other people out there who will feel the same way. And then you can just, you won't get tired of it. You know, you don't want to do the thing that's like, this is probably the most marketable thing I could possibly do. And after a few episodes, you're like, well, this is terrible. I just made myself another job now that I don't like. I think coming from that place, which is a terrible business plan, of just like the thing that you're excited about and interested in, and then working to just focus on that, just make that, whatever that is, you'll figure out how to kind of like, you know, build a channel identity over time. Your podcast will have a few episodes are going to be rough, and then it's going to kind of start to feel more like a thing. And that just, there's no shortcut through that. It just takes time. And it can be really fun to kind of be in that phase of it. And things will come together over time. And then you never know where you'll connect with, what will work, what your audience will be, what opportunities will show up. But I really am a big believer that if you just start out doing something you're interested in, something you're having fun with, you're enthusiastic about, and you just keep doing it, then down the line, really cool stuff will happen.
One of the things I love to do is go back and look at really big YouTube channels. I mean, I guess I do this for podcasts as well, especially if they were not like a celebrity beforehand. It's somebody who actually grew up as a creator, and go back and watch some of those early videos or listen to the first podcast, and they're so bad. It's like, but it's so encouraging to like go see one of the early Mr. Beast videos, and you're like, he was shooting this on a graining camera and didn't know what he was doing, and over time grew into one of these people who knows how to capture attention better than anybody else online.
Yeah. You can see the hours of reps that people have put in, like anything, you know, anybody who's good at anything, they make it look easy. But then if you try to do it with no experience, you realize, oh, wow, there's a skill gap here that needs to be covered. And the same way, like someone playing an instrument, you know, you can just tell when someone has put the time into something that they just seem comfortable with it and like a natural at it, but that didn't come naturally. They had to put in the time. And YouTube podcasting is all the same thing. The people who are really, really good at it have put in a lot of reps and made a lot of really bad stuff to get to the point where they can make some good stuff and make it seem like it's just this easy, natural thing that they don't have to think about.
We're very good when we're young at being bad at things. Like my daughter is incredible at starting gymnastics, and she's just as bad as I am at it. And then a few weeks later, though, she's really good at it, and I've not progressed because there's no way I'm going to go into a gymnastics thing and start rolling around and try to do moves. But children do that. And
yeah,
that's how everyone learns everything. You are always bad at the beginning. The idea of like somebody walking in and playing the piano perfectly the first time, we hear like one story like that. We imagine that's how things are supposed to be. But the truth is, nearly everyone is bad at everything and over time learns it. And yet when we hit a certain point, and I don't know when it happens, it's like, I expect to be good the first YouTube video I make. I think my first podcast should sound just as good as what I'm listening to that's produced by NPR. And so there's something wrong with me that I'm not at that level day one.
I did take a class and the ice skating instructor said, like, you find a weakness and you just attack it. Like, whatever the thing is that you're not good at, just attack that one thing. And then once you get it, attack the next thing. And it's crazy how you remember doing that as a kid. Like, you don't know how to do anything. So you're trying to ride your bike and you're bad at it. And you just every day you just go out and try and fall and tip. And eventually you ride your bike. It does take the mindset of embracing the beginner state, the experience of being a beginner. And that's hard. And a thing that I came across that was really helpful, because it was feeling embarrassed, and especially like at like an ice rink at an adult public skate, everyone's just in their normal clothes. And I'm over here, I've got my elbow pads on, I've got my knee pads on, I'm going to put on my wrist guards, I'm going to put on my helmet. I'm like, I can't smash my face into the ice and like lose a bunch of teeth right now. Just can't. And then I found something online where it was kind of like the same thing. There's so many things, especially with hockey and ice skating, where people are like, is blank age too old to start? It doesn't matter. 17-year-olds or 60-year-olds asking the same question. And somebody said like, yeah, I put on my stuff and I go over there and they're like, I'm not afraid to be seen trying. I was like, oh my God, I was feeling like a dork because I'm not as good as everybody else. And they're judging me when they're not paying attention at all. But worst case scenario is they just see someone trying, like putting an effort to get better. That's a cool thing. Like, it's really cool to try at something, put effort into it. And if people see that, that's something to be proud of, not something to be ashamed of. And this is a really simple mindset shift, but it really helped.
Let's go back to, what are the benefits of being like a creator that are not the monetization and the money side of it? What did it do for you when you said, I need to have something that's my own, that's not work? What came out of that for you?
That's a great question. For me, it was such a self-confidence builder. One of my early videos, it must have been like the 10th or 11th video on my channel, was like a little vlog about learning to play music and like why I started playing music. And I titled it Loud as F Word, which I don't want to say, but, and even the thumbnail even has the word censored. And in the video, I censored myself saying the word, which is like, it's YouTube. I didn't have to do any censoring. I could just say the word. I don't want to go that far. But to me, it was like, I just want to like, I don't, there was like a thing about like, I'm going to just kind of like play around with a little bit of profanity in terms of personality, because that's something I would never do at work or could do at work. And it like, it sort of sets a tone as like, this is my own thing that I want to do. And I love cheesy, dumb jokes and wordplay, and some people hate it and some people don't, but that's like how my brain works. And the first 100 videos on my channel have none of that, because it's, I was so scared of like wasting somebody's time that I didn't want to say like, you know, here is a Shure microphone and it does this, that, whatever, versus like, here's a Shure microphone and it sure is neat, but if you don't know which road to go, like all that stupid stuff, which is how my brain works. And the channel started doing better once I started doing more of that. So what it let me do was like rediscover my own personality, learn to be comfortable putting it out there. And then there was actually a thing that helped the channel do better, because people don't want a vanilla nothing. They want some kind of personality. And so, you know, that was a really beneficial thing that I learned from starting a channel and a podcast later on.
I'm right now reading Rick Rubin's book.
Me too.
Yeah. You are?
Yeah.
The Creative Act. And that is something that he, I think it was in an interview or maybe it was in the book, where he said, for everybody who's watching, Rick Rubin is the producer for tons of music albums, for tons of different genres of music that you would have heard of. And he, one of the things he said was, well, a piece of advice is, don't listen to anybody. Listen to yourself. Find out what you like and then make that art. Make the art for you. Be the audience and make your art for you. And if other people like it, that's great. And if you have to get a job to support that art, that's okay. But you've got to make the stuff for you. And I think it's easy for creators or podcasters to start with, I'm going to monetize what's the most popular podcast type. And you're like, what you're telling me actually what you want is a job. So you should just go get a job.
You're right.
Because you're asking, what will other people like? But the benefit of being a creator and like being yourself and being your own boss and doing it yourself is, I'm the audience for my own art. And if I like it, this is really cool. And if other people like it, that's amazing. And if I can make money doing the thing that I want to do, that's insane. But if you go down the path of, I don't really like true crime at all, but I do talk about true crime on my podcast every week, day in, day out. All you do is, you really just created a job that you didn't want to have, and you definitely can't quit.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you can't change it, because that's now the thing that you're known for. There are even less extreme examples of that. Early on with my channel, I started making some videos about 3D printing, just because I was really into 3D printing at the time. And some of those were like my first videos that did well, got like a couple thousand views or even more, which was nuts when you have like 4 subscribers on your channel. And it was pretty clear, like, wow, anytime I talk about a 3D printer or a 3D print, it does well. I could just do a 3D printing channel and it will do well. But after like I made a handful of 3D printing videos, like, that's literally everything I know and I'm interested in about 3D printing. Like, I'm kind of done. Then I sort of realized, like, oh, okay, maybe I actually even don't want to make any more, because I don't want people to come in thinking that's what this is when I don't want it to be that. It's easy sometimes. My first viral video was an Apple Watch video, where it was, I like on release day, I happened to get a watch and I just did a speed comparison. Of course, it's a video that took like 20 minutes to make. I didn't even plan to make it until I just that day. And that video went nuts. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is why people do Apple channels, because it's a very different world. But then I've also known people who have pivoted channels or started Apple channels, had huge success. But every time Apple announces something, they're like depressed for 3 months, because they just have to buy every model of MacBook, every color of iPhone, every whatever, and then do infinite test videos and comparison videos and benchmark videos. And it's just like the same cycle over and over again. And some people love it and don't get tired of it. And that's amazing. But a lot of people, they kind of did it because it was the thing that was popular, that got them popular, and they can't quit and they don't like it. And they find themselves, I've known people who are like, yeah, I have 500,000 subscribers and I make a ton of money, but I'm just going to go get a job again because I don't want to do this. Okay. I don't want to be in that situation myself. So it's scary.
We've talked a bit about kind of the being a creator as a whole. What are the differences between the like Tom Buck YouTuber and Tom Buck podcaster? How do those things work together? Or at least how are those just different mediums, and how do you see them?
I'm going to have an existential crisis now.
Maybe what's the difference between your podcast and your YouTube channel?
No, there's
not
actually
the individual.
There's a pretty easy answer, which is this: the podcast is not that the YouTube channel is formal. The podcast is just way more casual and maybe a little more in the weeds sometimes. It's a chance where when I'm editing a YouTube video, I'm not trying to do the Mr. Beast style of like editing for retention. That's like a little much for me, but I do like cut out breaths and pauses, and I rewatch the videos a million times and think like, you know, I kind of say this here and I say a very similar thing here. I got to get rid of one of these, like really try to get the video down to its essence. Even if it ends up being a 40-minute video about a microphone or something, like I feel like these are a necessary 40 minutes. Like it's as short as I can make it. And the podcast is sort of different because I should do more, but I don't even really edit my podcasts. I do pretty much everything just through the Rodecaster, and record pause is kind of my edit for the most part. And I just, you know, I have an outline. I try to explore ideas. I feel like if someone were to watch the YouTube channel and we meet in person, they're going to be like, oh, you're the same person from the YouTube channel. So it's not like that isn't me, but I feel like the podcast is a lot more like, yeah, if we're just sitting around together and talking about stuff, that's kind of what it feels like. So it's a more of a chance for me to explore an idea in depth and just share it with an audience rather than like having to have a conclusion necessarily or tighten it down as much as maybe I even should. Just kind of have a breather. That was why I started the podcast originally, actually, was because as a teacher, I had amazing students and I had like the best position, but they're all high school students. It's hard to get through a couple of sentences without having to like answer a question. The phone rings, someone comes in, you have to like, shh, please be quiet over there, put your phone away, you know, like repeat yourself. Like I couldn't get through one or two thoughts without doing that. And after years of that, you just feel like a crazy person. We're like, I just want to get this through this information and through these thoughts, please. And YouTube's a good outlet for that. But YouTube is, you know, like I am very aware of every word and every frame. And the podcast was like, I can just hit record and just go. And it was almost like therapy. And that's kind of, for me at least, I know not every podcast works that way, of course, but for me, that's the role that it's filled. And it's been really nice. And it really blew my mind that people actually started listening to that for some reason, which is great. So it's almost like they all satisfy different creative itches and therapeutic needs in a way.
YouTube can sometimes for me feel like there's a bit of this anxiety, like I need to hold your attention as firmly as I can, because over on that sidebar, there are so many other cool videos and I know you want to click them, but just stay with me a little bit longer. Where a podcast, I'm guessing you're probably driving your car or you're out for a walk or you're working out at the gym or you're doing dishes, you're doing something else. There isn't something fighting for your attention. You're actually happy to have a friend along having a conversation with you. You know, that's how podcasts can feel. So the tension is way lower. At least the anxiety level is lower, which is why I feel like the need to edit as tightly is like alleviated a bit. And it allows us to explore things that probably wouldn't come out in a YouTube video. Because when you're, you know, talking about the different colors of iPhones, you're just like, oh, this yellow is slightly bigger, brighter than this yellow, and the blue, it's really blue. Okay. Like you just have to get like just to the main points, and you can't like sit there and reminisce or think through and just kind of go off on tangents as much as you could on a podcast.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because they kind of work together. A lot of times I've made YouTube videos that unexpectedly came from podcasts. Like here's, you know, I always usually have a topic and an outline for a podcast, not totally just like random rambling, but you know, it's a little free form. And then I kind of realize, oh, there's sort of an idea here. There's something there. And then I sort of take that discussion and distill it down into something that is a little maybe more purposeful or intentional. And then that can sometimes be a great video. So that is one way that the two sometimes get tied together, which is then really fun because in that video or in the description, you can kind of point out like, hey, if you want more of this in depth, check out this episode over here. This video is 12 minutes. That's 80 minutes. If you want to go down that road.
One of the things we haven't touched on at all is your channel primarily, or at least quite often, talks about the actual gear. Mm-hmm. That people use. You talk about microphones and cameras. I got my camera because of you and your recommendations. One of your biggest videos is the Rodecaster Pro, which I have here. But what is your view on like gear as a whole? Like you are someone who teaches gear. How important is gear to being a creator, and especially when you're getting started?
Yeah, this is such a funny topic to me. And there's a very common thing in the creator world: gear doesn't matter. And I like totally disagree with it almost at every level because it's just not true. And what I do think is important and the nugget of wisdom in that, I think, is that gear should never be the thing that stops you from getting started. You know, so if you want to make a channel or a podcast and all you have is a phone, that's enough. You can get your reps in. You can get things going. You can actually make some really great stuff just with whatever you have. Like if you're watching YouTube or listening to podcasts, whatever you're using to watch and listen to those things on, you could use that same device to make those things like at its most basic level. But beyond that, there are certain things that you just need certain gear to have. And I do think that sometimes telling people that gear doesn't matter almost does them a disservice because then they start having unrealistic expectations when they look at someone who, you know, who has a $10,000 camera setup and they're like, well, my phone has cinematic mode. Why doesn't it look the same? It's like, there's a lot of reasons that it's not going to look the same, but your phone can look really good, but it's not going to do that. And it's not even just the quality thing, but it comes down to, you know, something like the Rodecaster. Most people don't need a Rodecaster. You're fine with just a single channel XLR interface or USB mic and you're fine. But when you're the person who wants to have multiple people plus some sound clips and some music and you want to eliminate editing on your podcast, suddenly it's like, oh, the Rodecaster, without that, you would have to then daisy chain six other pieces of gear together. Like, it really does make a difference. And learning how to use it makes a difference. What I always like, I just like gear in general, but I like sane and practical uses of gear. I don't like upgrading, you know, every year to every brand new thing all the time. And I like it when you can get something and that can be your thing that you use for a long time. But figuring out what that right thing is really important. And comparing stuff is fun. Like all the questions I have whenever I'm researching stuff, I try to put those into videos. Gear is really interesting. It's not the be all end all. It's not going to solve all the problems, but it is a very crucial thing. And there's also this other side of it, though, where it's like, sometimes people will think, you know, I got this microphone and like something like the Shure SM7B, mine's right there on the back wall, is a great example. They thought they would get it, plug it in, it's going to sound like their favorite podcaster who uses it. And it doesn't, because they need to figure out how to get the levels proper. They need to figure out how to EQ it for their voice. They need to maybe even figure out how to sound treat their room. And sometimes you don't want to do that. So I think there's that part of gear where it's not this magic bullet where it's, you know, it's just going to fix everything because you bought something. You need to put in the time to understand what you need, why you need it, how to use it. You know, I'm constantly making mistakes with gear all the time, but it's also just really fun. Like there's just something so satisfying about setting things up and trying new things and experimenting, and gear can enable you to do things in a new creative way sometimes. So I don't know. I love gear. I wouldn't encourage anyone to be irresponsible with their purchases of gear, but I also think that it's important to have good stuff, and that I'm also kind of against the idea of gear being overkill. Sometimes people are like, especially on YouTube, you don't need that camera for just a YouTube channel or just whatever. And it's like, well, I could give you a million reasons why I do, but also who cares? Like if I want to buy a cinema camera and just film talking head tutorials, who am I hurting? Nobody. Like it's, if that's what I want and I'm being financially responsible, you can do whatever you want to do. And if that brings you joy, because sometimes, you know, you could buy a cheaper thing. I could buy a $20 boom arm instead of this $100 boom arm. But every time I use that $20 boom arm, I'm probably going to get annoyed, like frustrated. Whereas this nice one is really fun. And every time I come in here, I'm like, I kind of want to use that thing that I bought because it's really cool. So it can also encourage you to make more. And, you know, that's, gear is such a big topic, but those are my like semi spark note thoughts on it.
One of the things I've noticed in myself, and now I think I see it in other people, though this may not be true, is that sometimes the gear is not the necessity, it's the excuse so that you don't have to be uncomfortable. Like, I don't actually want to release a podcast episode that's bad. I just want it to be really good. And if it can't be good, I don't want to do it. And then I found out all the big podcasters, they pretty much have like this setup that now looks like it's $2,000. Well, unfortunately, that's not available to me. That's why I can't be a podcaster. So I guess until I can put those $2,000 away and buy all this stuff, I can't do it. And that excuse, at least, I mean, I've come up with that one myself. Oh, if I really wanted to get into cooking, I'd really want to buy an expensive knife. If I really wanted to 3D print, I would want to buy that 3D printer. If I really want to get into four wheeling, I'm going to buy that Jeep. These are all real ones for me. If I want to do all these things, I have to have this expensive piece of gear. Well, I can't, so I guess I can't do it. there's my excuse and I'm out. And I've, at least I think I see that in other people with podcasting where they're like, well, what's, I had someone ask me, I only have $10,000 to spend on my podcast setup. What should it be on? And my answer was, you should buy a Samson Q2U and take $9,940 to put them into a bank account for a bit, S&P 500, and then like come back a few years from now.
Yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, that's probably the way to do it. Maybe pay for a Buzzsprout hosting plan, but otherwise that's about it. What's really funny is like two things came to mind when you were saying that, which is one, early on when I was starting my channel, I was in like this Facebook group for people who were starting channels and, you know, trying to figure out YouTube and stuff. And there was this one guy who was like, I really want to get started, but you know, I'm living in like this basement and it's very poorly sound treated and stuff. And so I was like, oh, you've got, you know, you hang your jackets up here on this closet thing. You hang some blankets here. Like it's super easy to soundproof just or sound treat just with what you have. And he's like, oh man, I can't do that because then for whatever reason, can't move this thing over here. And I was like, well, what's your channel? And he said it was about outdoor stuff. And I was like, oh, you don't even need to be in a basement. You go outside. And then the outdoor sound is actually just part of it because you're talking about outdoor topics. And it was just, no, I can't do that because then I don't have a tripod or whatever. Oh, you don't need a tripod. Just, you know, set your camera on a stump or like what, like every problem he had, I had a very easy, free solution for. And he had another excuse that it was like, okay, it doesn't matter. I could show up with everything you need and a whole crew ready to film and you wouldn't want to make something because for whatever reason, there's a block. And I think for some people that could be the gear. I need the $10,000 setup before I could record. The flip side of that was, which I saw all the time when I was teaching, especially because I taught at Title I schools, which are lower in socioeconomic status. So the students didn't have a lot. We had a lot of gear in my program that students could check out. But the number of times I would see kids make stuff on some busted old cheap phone with like the worst camera in the world, and they would spend all weekend filming something, editing something on this free, terrible app that put watermarks all over it or whatever. Like everything about it is bad, except that what they made ended up being really good because they wanted to make something. And it didn't matter. Nothing was going to stop them from making something with whatever they happen to have. And it's like, that's sort of the exact opposite. If you really want to do it, nothing's going to stop you from doing it. Like you will figure it out. You will find access to the gear. You will find access to the software and the tools and the web hosting and whatever. And, you know, it does come down to, I don't know, what's going on inside, I guess, more than anything.
I've definitely been on the excuse side where I'm finding sometimes the excuse or the problem that I have is actually the solution. The solution to the real problem, which is I do not like the sound of my own voice. I will never feel comfortable with it. I don't like it. And so I don't really want to hear it on a recording. I don't like the way that I slow down and I stammer. I'm never going to like that. So I don't want to hear it. My solution is the only way I will ever do a podcast is if I have $10,000 of equipment. And even if you showed up with that $10,000 of equipment, I'd be like, today's really not a good day. I've got so much going on. So sometimes I have noticed, at least myself, when I keep having a problem, those problems actually are the solution to a different problem. Yeah. And like, do I want to move past it? Or do I want to just like say, I'm not starting a podcast, not because of this made up problem of it's oversaturated or the made up problem of I don't have enough money. It's actually because I just don't want to do a podcast as much as I kind of claim that I do. It really is like this may not be the thing that I truly want. I'm more interested in being a person who other people perceive as a podcaster, if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely makes sense. I'm kind of going through something similar at the moment because going back to being a beginner, last year I started taking flying lessons to earn my pilot's license. And I was scared of flying, so it was kind of a cool thing to do. And it's been pretty amazing. After about, I don't know, 20-ish hours over the course of like 7 months, I kind of hit a point where I was like, I think I'm gonna take a break. I don't know why. I was kind of just like, it's really expensive and I've done a lot of really cool stuff, so I don't regret it for a second, but I don't know that I don't know how much I want to keep going. There's also a lot of excuses of like, well, the weather's bad and the, you know, right now I'm just busy, so I should push this lesson or this test to this time here or this reason, that reason, another reason. And I'm not going to lie, it's been a thing where like, if it happens to come up where someone's like, I heard that you were doing this or whatever, they're like really interested in it. And they want to make plans like, oh, when you get a license, we could fly to Vegas in a half hour. We could do all this cool stuff. And I'm like, and that feels really good. And so part of me is like, okay, I don't know if I want to keep going or not. I need to figure that out. but there really is a part of me that kind of likes the positive, like, yeah, it's a really cool thing that most people aren't doing and people are interested in it. And that feels really good. And I feel like maybe I should keep going or I won't have that anymore, or I'll be disappointing to the people who had all these, like, sorry, we're never going to do the 30 minute Vegas trip. Sorry. But like, and kind of really having to go back to, okay, is this something I'm interested in? Still interested? Did I lose interest? All of which are fine. Like, and that's okay. And same thing with podcasting. It happens so much online, you know, and especially if you've already done one thing, you have a YouTube channel, you should have a podcast. You have a podcast, you should be posting short form clips to wherever. And people feel like they have to be doing these things, even though they really don't want to, but they feel like they have to. And so you have someone who like just wants to do a long form podcast about whatever they're interested in. And now they find themselves spending most of their time editing 20 second vertical video for like Instagram and TikTok and YouTube shorts. And they're like, I hate doing this, but I have to do it because it's the thing that you're supposed to do. And now there's no more joy in the thing that they really liked. And going all the way back to what you said of like, if you're kind of keep making these excuses and, you know, what is the actual reason? Is it something you really want to do? Or is it something you've sort of told yourself, I am someone who wants to do this thing, or other people, you have external pressures, like whatever it might be. It gets complicated. It's like quite an exercise in psychology.
There is absolutely something to the, I want to create because this is good for my soul. Mm-hmm. It's just good for me to have something that's my own that I am creating. And even if I get 30 listeners or 20 subscribers on YouTube, like that's good. I don't, yeah. I'm doing this for me. And if I attract other people, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. Then it turns into, well, how often do you post on TikTok? And you're like, oh, none, actually. And you're like, oh, well, that's how you get listeners. Okay. Well, and then repurpose those for YouTube shorts and for Instagram reels. But you can't have the TikTok logo in them or else they're going to get downgraded. So you have to make them separate. Okay. And I'm making them separate. And then are you using Twitter? There's a new thing going on with Elon Musk. And I don't know how much you want to be involved, but, and then LinkedIn. And you're like, I now have 400 things to do, none of which are really aiding the real goal, which was I'm doing something that's creative and for me. I don't know. Did you ever feel that when you were kind of getting into this creation?
Oh, I feel that all the time. Yeah. I mean, that's like TikTok is some vertical video is something I'm just not into. And yeah, I understand that a lot of people are really into it. I typically, for the most part, don't like watching it unless it's like a cute dog or a cool hockey trick or something. And I, for the most part, don't like making it. Every once in a while, there is an idea where I'm like, oh, this is really cool, but I literally only need 30 seconds. I can't make a video about this. And it's like, that's a perfect thing to make a little short vertical thing for. For the most part, though, like, I don't like framing things that way. I just don't enjoy it. So I don't want to do it. But I definitely feel the push of like, you have to do it. Definitely feel the push. And sometimes I've done like sponsorships with companies where they're like, oh, and then what about your Instagram and your Twitter? And I'm like, those are really huge messes. Like those are not involved in this right now. Like you don't trust me. There's nothing going on there that you want to like, it's not going to help this cause right now, this sponsored thing right here, because I just use them how I want to use them. But I did feel at a certain point like, oh, I'm signing up for Twitter and this is how you have to use Twitter. I'm signing up for Instagram. This is how you have to use that. And, you know, there's other stuff where it's like, maybe I just don't want to check this anymore. I don't need to. And the thing I always think is it's good to check stuff out and to try it. You know, like maybe Discord is something that's cool for you. Maybe TikTok is great. Maybe it's not. So try it. See how you like it. But if you don't like it, even if it is something very popular, don't feel the need to do it, because then it does become draining and taking away from the thing that you really like doing, which is the thing that maybe people are even interested in the first place. So it's like, you know, if you have an audience because you make videos, instead of spending all your time navigating this weird world of like influencer marketing or vertical video or whatever, just spend that time making more videos that you like, which is why people found you in the first place. Like, just go back to the thing that you enjoy doing. And you can always tell when someone enjoys, they're doing something because they enjoy it, versus it's like watching a band play on stage, but they hate each other. It's like, yeah, the music sounds good, but there's like, it's very different than like, here's a group of musicians who love spending time together and are friends, and now they're playing music together. It's a very different feeling, even though it's kind of the same thing on the surface.
Before we close, can you tell me a little bit about being a creator who makes money by being a creator and what that process was like? I know you said you had a bunch of different little income streams. Could you tell us what some of those are, even if we don't talk about numbers?
The money and creator thing is very conflicting to me. When I started my channel, I was adamant, like, I'm never going to make money. There's never going to be an affiliate link. There's never going to be anything, because I thought that that would somehow like contaminate the thing. Like, I just want to make something, even if it's a gear review. I want everyone to know that I'm making this review because I'm interested in this thing, or I want to share something about it, not because there's some greater marketing scheme or money behind the scenes or whatever. And I get that. I get why I felt that way. I was also wrong. I was also like totally wrong, and probably would have been a good idea to like open myself up to, you know, some forms of monetization earlier. But ultimately, the goal was to like protect the integrity of the thing I want to make. And what I had to learn, and it took a long time to learn, was you can do that. Money isn't inherently evil, and it's okay to make money making stuff that you love. And there's ways that you can do that, that protect the thing that you're making. I think we've talked about it before, but I have a whole page on my website that's like an ethics statement that covers how I approach brand deals. And I send every single, I really don't do a lot of, it even says on there, I don't like doing sponsored videos. So like right away, that's a terrible sales pitch if I'm trying to get someone to sponsor me. But it's setting the tone of like this. I don't want to make every video is now a client project because it's a sponsored video. But every once in a while, something pops up that makes a lot of sense and can be a really cool thing for me, for the channel. Like I did a sponsored video with Sennheiser earlier this year, which was awesome because I really like Sennheiser. I really like the microphone that we were talking about. I really liked getting paid that month because I needed, flight lessons are expensive and bills are expensive. But also Sennheiser was on board to like to donate a couple hundred of these microphones to different schools around the world and even just individuals. And it was this really cool thing where it's like, this is a sponsored video where I get to work with a company I like, talk about something I'm excited about that I would be talking about anyway, and I get paid and other people benefit from it. They get gear and equipment. And that, how would it have been better if that weren't sponsored? If it were just me, I spent $130 on this microphone, I'm telling you about it. It would have been the same video with so much less benefit to so many people. Like, so there are actually ways where it can be a good thing. And you just sort of have to like, it's very different for everybody. Keeping your integrity and the relationship with your audience, I think keeping that intact is the most important thing, however you choose to do that, which is different for everybody. So since I don't do a ton of sponsored stuff, it does help to do that. I do have courses because I like, I know it sort of is like a cliche, like, oh, you're a YouTuber with a course. But I was a teacher for 10 years and I really, you know, I like teaching stuff and I like the courses because I can, it's not that you can't get that info anywhere else, but it's sort of a more curated, focused, it's almost like in between a podcast and the YouTube channel, because there's a lot more breathing room and a lot more depth than a YouTube video would have. But it is obviously way more focused and like everything is written out and planned and curriculum designed like a class would be. So those really help. I did go into like supporter communities like Patreon and YouTube channel memberships, which blew my mind because people actually wanted to pay just to support the channel. And then so I started like putting names at the end of videos. And then every once in a while I do posts for them or live streams, or, you know, it's a really fun thing, especially as the channel has grown. That's been cool because when you do a live stream on a channel with 120,000 subscribers, it can kind of get busy, which is great. It's a cool problem to have. But when you do a live stream, you know, on a Tuesday and 25 channel supporters show up, you can kind of just sort of like hang out and talk and just have a good time, very low key. So finding things like that that have worked, and then affiliate marketing ends up being huge too, which is like, you know, a bad month on Amazon would be like $1,700 or $1,800, and a good month would be like over $4,000 of just people clicking links that would be there anyway. Like, why not do that?
It's definitely wonderful if what you talk about is gear. And I'm sure that's why so many people are attracted to Apple videos and gear videos and things like that, because Amazon giving you a little bit of a kickback on anybody you send their way, and they already are looking for the link anyway. Well, so it's not like
that's
pushed
thing
it on them.
Yeah. And when I started my channel, I was like, I'm going to put links because I always want there's so many times where I'd see somebody with something and I would try to find what it is. And I would literally have like a paused frame of the video and I'd have the product image and I'd be looking like, oh, there's a red button there, but mine, like trying to find, if they could just put the link to the exact one they're using, that would be amazing. That was like pre-YouTube before I knew about affiliate links. And then it wasn't until like a year into it, I made a video about a camera lens and my channel was small, like under 1,000 subscribers. I just bought a new camera lens and made a video about it. In the first week, I had 5 people tell me they bought that camera lens because of the video. And I was like, that's like, this is an expensive lens. And it convinced 5 people to buy them. And then I was like, if those were affiliate links, nothing would have changed except I would have made a couple $100. Ironically, too, like affiliate links, sometimes it's easy to make them shorter. So like visually and aesthetically, it keeps the description more organized. My thing is like, as long as I'm not making a video to share an affiliate link, like here's something that's a piece of junk that I hate, but you're going to click that link and give me that 24-hour cookie. So as long as I'm not doing that and the links are the links that would be there anyway, I think it's a win-win for everybody because people get the exact thing that they're looking for. I get a commission if they make a sale, and it's been an unexpected, really, really great revenue stream over the past few years. But I mean, all of those things help. And you know, the courses are, so at least the way I do them, because I want them to be good, they're a lot of work to put together. And it's an interesting thing with those, because once that initial push is done, though, they are just kind of there and you're just sort of keeping tabs on them, updating them when necessary. And that's really cool. Like, I don't know, like last month I have 3 courses out and I think it was $2,345 was what came through courses, which is great because I didn't make a new course in that time. Sometimes it's zero also. Like sometimes no one buys anything that month and it's just $0. But it's kind of cool when it's like, wow, okay, these assets that I've put together help pay the mortgage, or more than pay the mortgage last month. That's awesome. All that little kind of stuff really, really does make a difference when it all pools together.
I think there's this misconception sometimes that people have that if you have a job, you're secure. If you have a creator that you put this together yourself, that's less secure.
Yeah.
And that's very true on day one. Like day one where you got a job, now you know 2 weeks or a month from now, a paycheck comes in. Day one as a creator full-time, you do not know, unless you've already been doing it for a while, like in your case, that a check will come in. But now you're in a position, you're 5 years in as the employee and 5 years in as the creator, the employee has one person who says, this no longer works. Unfortunately, we couldn't make the numbers work, or we really didn't like something you did. We're moving on. Mm-hmm. Business isn't doing well, whatever it may be. On the creator side, for everything to fall apart, YouTube has to demonetize you. Patreon has to say, all your patrons say, I no longer want yeah. to support. Amazon says, we're actually taking away all commissions. Your course has to go offline somehow. You have to have like,
it's a bad
like
day.
All yeah. these catastrophes.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's so much more secure because it is so much more diversified.
Yeah. I mean, I never even thought of it that concretely, but you are completely right. Because I was the last person I would ever think would be a full-time like YouTube creator. So like careful and conservative with everything. And I had a tenured teaching position. Like, it's very hard. People do really bad things sometimes and don't get fired. And like, it's very hard to get fired from that position. It's very easy for them to make your life miserable, though. And, you know, yeah, I'm teaching this digital media program and this great thing, but all it takes is one administrative, legislative, cultural district change. Somebody in some position somewhere, it's like, oh, you're going to be teaching, you know, middle school remedial English, you know, to violent offenders now, because I want to bring my buddy in from this other school to take over your program. Something like that could happen at any point. So even the really secure thing, like, I guess I would still be getting a paycheck, but I would hate every minute. You know, they can make you hate every minute of your existence. And that's probably the most secure position someone could be in. If you're not a union tenured teacher, then yeah, all it takes is one manager to switch out or change their mind, or one bad quarter or something. And sorry, the plans change. I mean, the number of times you hear about like tech companies and things pivoting, like we're going all in on this. Nope, we're going all in on this direction. Sorry, guys over here. Like, we did want to bring you on permanently, but now we're going over here, so we don't need you anymore. It can really happen. And a thing that really struck me, I guess, was after I had put in my notice that I was leaving teaching. So it's just been over 2 years that I left that. I was shocked that every person I talked to, from other teachers to administrators to even like district officials, every single person said they wish they could leave too, but they didn't know where to begin. They didn't have like a thing. And I didn't realize I had been building a lifeboat with the YouTube channel and the podcast and everything. And I was just so grateful that I had that, because it was an option when things just weren't going well. It's like, oh, I can just get in my lifeboat and paddle away. That's kind of a cool thing. You don't realize you're building it sometimes, but I was shocked at how many people had nothing and really wanted something. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, I am not the exact same, because I did not go into being a creator, but had that experience with law, like lots of lawyers saying, I really wish I wasn't so far in my career that I could leave now. You know, the way law gets you is that you start making enough money that you start committing yourself to making lots of money. And as silly as it sounds, there's a way you can grow your lifestyle that you're making $250,000 a year and you cannot make any less, because you are in a country club and you have two expensive leases and your kids go to private school and there's no other option. And now you have to stick with the only way that you can make that much money, which is continuing the practice of law. So there was a bit of, I didn't have a lifeboat, but I knew we were close enough to shore that I could jump out and swim to a new job, because I hadn't gotten out to sea. And it was, as soon as I did that, a bunch of people were like, oh, I'm out to sea. And there's no way I could ever swim back now, though. One last thing I read about you, Tom, I want to hear this story if this is true.
Okay.
I read somewhere that you met your wife through YouTube.
Yes. It's so funny. That's, talk about the algorithm, like showing you what you need. We've told this story a lot, so if somebody's listening and they've heard it, I apologize, but it is pretty fun. Basically, my wife quit her job. She also had worked at a school. She was like an admin marketing person at a private school. That was her thing. She quit in 2016 because she was sort of noticing like this push towards digital media, and she kind of wanted to almost like advocate for digital media literacy. I was a digital media teacher teaching digital media stuff, and she had been doing that for about a year. It was the summer of 2017. I was getting really into, like, I'm going to start this YouTube channel. I'm going to do everything. I was super into Casey Neistat. So what I was going to do is buy a boosted board, because if you started a YouTube channel in 2017, you had to have a boosted board. And I was looking up reviews, and I found this review from this girl who like had never been on one before. So it wasn't like the person who was like, oh, look at me, like I'm a pro skater. It was like day one of boosted board. And half of the video is her like anxiously waiting for the UPS guy to get there. And then he gets there and she's been waiting all day. And she's like, oh yeah, cool, thanks. Like she plays it off like she hadn't been looking out the window, which is exactly what I do. So it was just like, oh, I really like this video. It's really fun. The next video that popped up, she was talking about like a packing trip to Iceland. And I had just booked a trip to Iceland. And then the next video was her talking about digital media literacy, which I was literally teaching classes called media literacy. And she was like, in the video, she was talking about like, she has this idea that there's like this misconception between young people being tech literate versus tech savvy, and like kind of what that means to bridge that gap and all this stuff, which is literally what I do lessons on every day. And she was sort of like, I have this theory that it'll work, but maybe not. And I swear it didn't come from a like hitting on a girl on the internet place. I had never left a YouTube comment in my life. But at that point, like, I left her a comment and I was just like, she has the comment still, but it was something about like, I'm a digital media teacher. I need to, like, what you're doing is exactly right. This is like so perfect, blah, 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 blah. And she replied and said, like, send me an email. I'd love to learn more about your program. And so I sent her an email. It was crazy. She had started this thing that month. She was calling it All In August. And she was like, I'm just going to say yes to every opportunity that pops up. I emailed her about my program. She was like, oh, I'd love to see it. I was like, well, you're more than welcome. If you want to drive all the way out here and check it out, you're more than welcome to. School starts in a couple weeks, so it kind of has to be now because it can't really be during like the school day at the moment. She's like, okay. And she drove out and we just like hit it off just as human beings immediately, just like as it was. I've never, we started talking. I forget. She arrived at my campus at like 1 PM that day. And we like just kept literally talking nonstop until like 1 AM. And we had never met before. And it was all about like digital media and YouTube and the freedom of like being your own creative person and all this stuff. Like these discussions I'd never had with anybody before. And so we then just became like great friends, and we started working on like these weekly live stream sort of podcast things together. And like there were all these people going like, oh, are you gonna like that the girl from YouTube, the YouTube girl? And I was like, no, it's just, we're just friends or whatever. And I was wrong, and we weren't. and now we've been married for like 3 years. So it's a crazy situation, but it all came from the YouTube algorithm recommending the right video at the right time.
I love that this kind of ties back to one of your first points, which was like, you just have to do the videos that you want to do. Yeah. Had she not been doing the videos that were uniquely her, she would not have been like such a clear signal, like, oh, this is a person that kind of I connect with. Like,
yeah,
boosted board in a style that you were interested in. Then Iceland, which, whoa, that's weird. I'm going to Iceland. And digital media literacy. Nobody else on YouTube probably had all three of those videos. And somehow it all connected where you went, whoa, there's enough in common here that I probably don't feel, I don't feel weird leaving a comment, you know, telling about myself, because it's so almost strange that we have this much in common.
There's no YouTube coach that would say, like, make a channel that has all those things. I'd say, don't put all that on one channel.
Absolutely. It said, split it up onto three channels because there's three separate audiences, but then you don't attract that like middle of the triple Venn diagram that probably the only two people in it were you and your wife.
Well, that's, it's funny because I never even, I knew nothing. That was literally the first time I left a comment on YouTube, and I never looked at any other numbers. And it wasn't until very recently that she was like, yeah, that video you left the comment on has like 200 views. Like 7 years later, I think it has like 200 views. It is not a popular video. So by every metric on YouTube, that is a failed video. But that's how we became husband and wife, was because of that video. So, you know, like, you, and she made that video because it was the thing that she was interested in and the thing that she was passionate about and what she really wanted to share that day. And, you know, it's a really good lesson to just kind of follow that, like the Rick Rubin book, where it's, a lot of it is about trusting your gut and your creative instinct and being aware when something kind of sparks in you to go, I'm going to chase that a little bit and not shut it out for something else.
That is so true. Before we go, we're going to have links to your YouTube channel, your podcast, your website, your courses, everything. Is there anything else you'd want to leave the audience with before we wrap up?
I mean, that's all great stuff if you want to check out any of the stuff I do. The only thing I would say is what I've learned over this past number of years of doing this, the only regret I have is that I didn't get started sooner. And I've said that many times, but seriously, if somebody has that push of wanting to start something, whether it's a channel, podcast, anything, whatever gear you currently have, use that and do that and get started, because you won't regret it. Even if you decide it's not for you, you do a couple and you're like, oh, I don't like this, not for me. That's cool. You figured that out. And that's an important thing, but it could also turn into something. And a year from now, you'll be really glad that you started a year ago.
And you might just meet your future spouse by doing it.
Guaranteed that'll happen for sure.
Tom, thank you so much for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much.